So last week we talked about that magical word nurture and motherhood and how motherhood is so closely tied to atonement and Christ, and what Jesus does for us is so real, so connected to the role of what mom does. Today, let's ask the question, what's the role of fatherhood? And I know, let me begin, I feel like we need to say this. Let's pull up the proclamation. I think this last sentence is worth repeating. Disability, death, and other circumstances may necessitate individual adaptation. And I don't want to get caught up on, well, my family didn't have that, or this family doesn't have that. And we're going to do our very best. But what does the ideal family look like? Children need mothers. In the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we do not believe that equality means same. And we differ from the world, and we're going to take shots because of that. And I know that. I know the world's going to throw darts at us because the world sometimes thinks to be equal, you have to be exactly the same. And that's not what we believe. We relish the differences between man and woman. We believe they stand side by side as equal partners. But we don't want to diminish the one. We don't want to make them the same. Can I ask you a question? Your mom and your dad do the same things for you? Are they interchangeable? When you need mom, is dad a good substitute? When you need dad, is mom a good substitute? They are not interchangeable. And we relish in the difference that each brings to a family. We do not want sameness. We want equality. We don't want any man treating his wife as lesser. We believe in the symbolism of the rib. We believe that we stand side by side. Adam, or God, took Eve from Adam's rib, placing her at his side. He didn't take her from underneath him, above him, in front of him, or behind him. Eve came from the rib. Anything I do that ever places my wife below or behind or in front, or above, is not appropriate. We stand side by side, but we don't stand the same. I very much appreciate that my children need their mother. I'm not threatened by that. I don't feel bad about that. I told you this time, the last time, the number one question I've been asked by my children is, where's mom? Not 2 hours ago, my 20-year-old, who lives at home, walked into the house from being in the backyard and said, where's mom, Dad? Where's mom? And once again, I told her where she was, and she didn't go find her. She didn't need her. She just needed to know she was there. So what is it that dads do? What is the instinct of manhood? What is it that comes natural to fathers? And we ought to celebrate. We ought to understand that that is a great victory. And that is my solemn responsibility. Now, I know the proclamation gives three words to fathers, but they are not of equal importance. The word preside is important, but preside is simply hierarchical. We talked about hierarchical priesthood and patriarchal priesthood. All they're saying, I think, with the word that I am to preside over the family is that whereas the family is a unit of the church, they're going to come to you first, Dad. I think that's the only way that I preside, because within my home, we preside side by side. But as a unit of the church, they're saying, Dad, can we connect with you first? I get that. And this one, I wish we lived in a world where most of you could survive on a single income. There was a day where families could survive on a single income. I don't know if that's possible anymore. Do you know what houses around this institute are selling for? $600,000, $700,000, and $800,000. Ordinary, normal houses are $800,000. And so, yeah, I think there was a time where typically the male was the breadwinner. And if you can pull that off and you want to pull it off that way, great. But what is right for your family is something that you're going to have to decide. I've watched my children struggle with that. I have a daughter who was the vice president of Crumble Cookie. Made a lot of money. And quit. Because she just wanted to be a mom. And they found a way to live on a single income. Well, kind of. She works a side job. So provide is an odd word today. If you were to ask, as I look around nature, as I read the scriptures, as I look at what is it that dads do, it's the other P word that I want to talk about. Preside is simply a function of a hierarchical church. Preside. Provide is tough today in our economy. But the other word, if I look at what do dads do in nature? What is it that children need from their father? I think it comes down to the greatest role of fatherhood is to make them safe. It's to make the family feel safe. And I really think preside and provide are simply an avenue of we're safe. Our needs are met. If you were to ask me what children need, I want to go back to this paragraph because when it declares what parents are supposed to do, husband and wife have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and their children. I think what the Lord has been saying for decades is that families and children need two things. Children need to know they're loved, and children need to know they're safe. The biggest violation is a mother who doesn't love her children and a father who doesn't make them feel safe. I would suggest to you that, just like nurture is a sacred word, protect is a sacred word. Now, I have an 11-year-old son out there in the gym right now who loves basketball. I'll tell you, he comes to play basketball, but that's not why he's here. Any guesses as to why he's here? He is my shadow. He's my shadow. Because wherever dad is, he feels safe. And there are times he needs mom. There are times he says to me, "Where's mom?" But as soon as it gets Wednesday, as soon as it gets scary, now what comes out of his mouth? "Where's dad?" Let me share another equally significant story. In June of 2002, that date may not be significant to you, but that date is very significant to me. The night of June 5th, 2002, a very evil man broke into a house that did not belong to him, put a knife to the throat of a 13-year-old girl, and took her from the home. He kidnapped her. He took her up into the hills of Salt Lake and for 9 months violated her. Now, at the time, I had a 7-year-old daughter. This picture was taken shortly after June 5th, 2002. Sweet little 7-year-old daughter. Now, hearing about Elizabeth Smart horrified this girl. It shattered her world. Because where should girls feel safe? Where should a little girl feel safe? In her bedroom, especially if she shares it with her sister, right? You're safe in your bedroom. But guess what the news of Elizabeth Smart told my daughter? Little girls aren't safe in their bedroom. Even if your sister's there. And that shattered her world. This girl has always been a little very sensitive to safety. So in the middle of the night, she grabs a pillow and a blanket and she creeps into mom and dad's room and sleeps on the floor. Now let me show you mom and dad's room. There's the door, there's the bathroom, there's the bed, there's dad, there's mom. Now look at all the room mom has. Look at all the room mom has. And where does she sleep? Right there. I woke up in the morning and I stepped on her. I didn't expect her to be there. She gave me no room. She was as close as she could. The next morning, I stepped on her again. By the third morning, I was looking for her. But every single night, every night, at some point, now I'd tuck her in, I'd hug her, I'd kiss her. I'd say, stay in your bed, it's so much more comfortable. But every night, at some point in the middle of the night, she'd wake up in a panic. Grab her pillow and a blanket and creep into mom and dad's room and sleep on the floor. Now, I will admit, at first, I thought it was the corner. That corner is furthest away from the front door. An intruder who came in the house would pass everyone else before he got to that corner. But it wasn't the corner that made her safe, was it? What made that little girl feel safe? She didn't sleep here. Why did she sleep there? She was safe next to dad. And she taught me exactly what my role is in our family. You know what? They have forgiven me for not being very wealthy and providing an abundance. I chose to be a teacher. And I've never regretted my choice. But I have not provided an abundance of funds. And you know what? I don't think my children care. Looking back, I don't think they've cared. I think the one thing that means the most to my children is that when you're in dad's presence, you're safe. Mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, you're safe. I now have a 9-year-old. Jen and I have a 9-year-old. I had a picture of him just a second ago. Where did I put it? I deleted it. I moved it. But I have a 9-year-old. Big kid. But every night, he sleeps on the floor. It's to the point where we now have a nice little mat next to dad on the floor. We just permanently keep a mat on the floor next to dad. And I try my hardest to say, Owen, your bed's so much more comfortable. But I am never ever going to suggest to that boy he is not welcome next to dad. And I think that has been the greatest lesson I could teach, the greatest testimony I can give. I think my children will forgive much of my providing. I don't think my children need me to preside as much as they need me to protect. When a bully picks on them, when a teacher does something unfair, that's when they say, "Where's Dad?" Going back to this little girl, I gotta tell you a funny story about this, about her. Before Elizabeth Smart, one night she said, "I can't go to sleep. There's a monster in my closet." She's always been nervous about safety. One time when she was 20 years old and she went jogging, and a car followed her suspiciously, made her nervous. She's 20 years old. Guess what she does? She pulls out her phone and she calls Dad. She says, "You just talk to me, okay? Here I am. You just talk to me until you feel safe." It took about 4 or 5 minutes. She said, "Okay, I'm safe. Thanks, Dad." Hung up and she continued her jog. But when she was little, she just said, "Dad, I can't go to sleep because there's a monster in my closet." So I went to the closet, of course, and wrestled the monster out. I mean, I physically wrestled the monster down the hall, out the front door, slammed the door and said, "Don't you ever come back." And I walked upstairs and she just went right to sleep. "Thanks, Dad." And the next night, of course, there was another monster in her closet. So that became a nightly ritual. I had to wrestle the monster out of the closet and out the front door. So one day I am teaching a night class like I have often done, and it was bedtime, and my wife tucked her in, and, "Mom, there's a monster in my closet. I can't go to sleep. Where's Dad?" So my wife, knowing the routine, went to the closet and wrestled the monster out, and my daughter was not fooled. "Mom, where's Dad?" And she would not go to sleep. So my wife called me. I stepped out of my classroom and I said, "Go put your phone inside the closet." And yelling as loud as I could, I said, "What are you doing in my daughter's closet? You get out of there. If you're there when I get home, so help me, I will slaughter you." And I said, "Jen, go open the front door." And my wife ran down and opened the front door. And I yelled, "You get out now. Shut the front door, Jen." And she slammed the front door. And she went right to sleep. And I thought, maybe I'm doing something right. Maybe that is what manhood is all about. It's not better. It's not more important. It's not who earns the most. I don't think they care how much I bring home. But I truly believe they care how safe they feel. And so, I bring the 11-year-old every Thursday night so he can play basketball and be with Dad. And if they walk in the door and say, "Where's Mom? I need to know where she's at." And then it gets windy and they say, "Where's Dad?" Then I think I'm doing something okay. And I would suggest that's what children need. They need to be loved. And they need to feel safe. I love this, and maybe I leave this idea with just this thought. W.C. Brand was a writer in England. He caught my attention with several things that he wrote, but of all the things he wrote, nothing has meant more to me than this. He said, "The place to take the true measure of a man is not in the darkest place or in the amen corner, nor in the cornfield, but by his own fireside. There he lays aside his mask, and you may learn whether he is an imp or an angel, cur or king, hero or humbug. I care not what the world says of him, whether it crowns him boss or pelts him with bad eggs. I care not a copper what his reputation or religion may be. If his babies dread his homecoming, and his better half swallows her heart every time she has to ask him for a $5 bill, he is a fraud of the first water, even though he prays night and morning until he is black in the face. But if his children rush to the front door to meet him, and love's sunshine illuminates the face of his wife every time she hears his footfall, you can take it for granted that he is pure, for his home is a haven, heaven. I can forgive much in that fellow mortal who would rather make men swear than women weep, who would rather have the hate of the whole world than the contempt of his wife, who would rather call anger to the eyes of a king than fear to the face of a child. I would suggest that that's manhood, fatherhood, husbandhood, and we need manhood. I used to be bothered when my sons naturally gravitated to guns. Why do my sons want to play with guns and swords and bows and arrows and crossbows? Why do my sons want to play with guns? And then it dawned on me. Perhaps in the deep corner of their soul, they remember a father who protected his family from evil influence. Maybe what's in their instinct is to protect. And yeah, I'd like to teach them that guns aren't the best way to do that, but I have lost my objection to the instinct to protect. And just wanted to share my observation that manhood is to create this sense of safety, that you are safe in my presence. Any thoughts before we move on?
I think you succeeded.
Boyd.
I think it's interesting because protection goes a lot deeper than just physical protection. It's also protection from ideas sometimes. It's protection from hard things in the world. And a lot of times it falls on the father to have those hard discussions and to do them in a way that protects instead of harms.
Yep. You know, I grew up with a family whose dad forbade television in the home. And I understand what he was doing. He was trying to protect his children from influence. But the problem is, guess what his kids did when they came over to my house? They sat glued in front of the television. And I think there's so many ways we need to say, wait a minute, my job is to protect. And am I doing that? Am I protecting my children? Thank you. Any other thoughts?
Mom has the same thing. She doesn't let anybody watch any TV, like not a TV screen. But we have like special DVDs, and we use a projector instead. So there's nothing bad on the TV, just Disney shows. His mom had to be glued to a TV for babysitting when my grandma, her mom, was watching it too much and didn't pay attention to my mom and took care of her, so she made sure it didn't happen to us.
It's getting harder and harder to protect your family. There's way too many influences. Okay, I want to take the last 15 minutes and throw the next one out. So we've talked about motherhood. We talked about fatherhood. What then is the responsibility of mothers and fathers? What is it that they combine to do? If I've got a nurturer and I've got a protector and my children feel loved and my children feel safe, what are the most important, going back to the proclamation, let me just end with this idea. What are the most important things that parents teach their children? So if we did role of mom, role of dad, now let's do duty of mom and dad. And I love how simple this is. They simply say parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness, to provide for their physical and spiritual needs. I think there's a lot of, there's mom, there's dad, there's a coming together. Love them, provide for them, make them safe. Give them a safe place to grow up. And then teach them three things. In the proclamation, prophets, seers, and revelators say, you have an obligation to teach your children three significant things. Measure your success as parents as how well your children learn these three things. Number one, to love and serve one another. Do your children love and serve one another? Do they observe the commandments of God? And then this one's fascinating. Are they law-abiding citizens? Of all the things that they could have put in, I think it's fascinating that prophets, seers, and revelators boiled down to the duty of parenthood is to teach three significant skill sets. My children know how to love. They know how to serve God. And they know how to be good citizens. They are law-abiding citizens. And every time I read that, it strikes me as to, that's of all the things to list in a proclamation. My duty, my job, my existence as their father and our responsibility as their parents is to teach them how to love each other. How to obey the commandments of God and be law-abiding citizens in the country. That is important to pause and let that distill upon you. Love each other. Obey his commandments and be law-abiding citizens in the country in which they exist. If I do that, I, by the proclamation, have done my job. I have been a successful dad. It then goes on to say, husbands and wives, mothers and fathers will be accountable before God for the discharge of these obligations. Do my children know how to love each other? Now, Boyd K. Packer, who was acting president of the Quorum of the Twelve, rose from the bottom of the Twelve all the way up to the top, lived long enough to preside over the Quorum of the Twelve. And right before he died, he said something that I will never forget. And I'll come back next week, and I want to start with this, but I want to use it now. Boyd K. Packer taught the following. Where is it? Oh, here it is. Boyd K. Packer said, Like my brethren, I have traveled all over the world. Like my brethren, I have held positions of trust in education, in business, in government, and in the church. I have written books and, like them, have received honors, degrees, certificates, plaques. Such honors come with the territory and are undeserved. Assessing the value of all those things, the honors, the plaques, the awards, the accomplishments, assessing the value of all those things, the one thing I treasure more than any of them, more than all of them put together, his greatest accomplishment on this earth, the thing of most value to me, is how our sons and daughters and their husbands and wives treat their children, and how in turn our grandchildren treat their little ones. Have I taught my family to love each other? There is nothing more I'm going to be accountable for than, do my children know how to love each other? Do they know how to obey the commandments of God? And are they law-abiding citizens in the country in which they live? I leave you to think about that responsibility and how you're going to teach your children to love each other, to not fight and quarrel with each other, to love each other. The thing of most important is how my children treat their families. Do they know? Do my children know how to love each other? Do they know how to keep the commandments? And are they law-abiding citizens? I have thought about those three so much throughout my life. I leave you with my testimony that what we need in families is, we need to feel loved. We need to feel safe. And we need to be taught how to love each other, how to obey the commandments, and how to be law-abiding citizens of whatever country we live in. May that be our quest as parents, is my prayer in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.